The views and opinions expressed during Martha Norwalk's Animal World are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, management, or other advertisers. This is your alternative talk station, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Now wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
Norwalk, and welcome you to the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here at Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. Now, the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com, just like it sounds, Martha Norwalk, N-O-R-W-A-L-K.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. Well, I'll tell you, it is a gray, rainy Sunday morning. Can't believe it's November already. And across the table from me, as always, Animal World's production engineer, Gary Hill, is here. Good morning, Gary.
Morning.
Not quite as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as usual, but you've been kind of busy all morning.
Yeah, it's hard to be on a day like this, too. It's gray and cold and rainy, November.
Dare I say it? Speaking of gray and cold and rainy, no. Sunshine and cheery, that would be. Animal World's co-producer and call screener, Sandy Gaston, is here.
Just smack her. That's all. Just smack her.
Well, so you don't realize it, but you're in trouble.
Oh, why? What did I do?
Well, first of all, let me say that we're very glad that you're back in the saddle again.
Okay, but why am I in trouble? Let's get to the news.
Well, you see, Gary, you know, it's dangerous for you to not be here on a Sunday.
Okay.
Because that leaves Gary and me here just by ourselves.
True.
And so he and I made an executive decision last week.
Oh, what was that?
Well, we decided on when you're not here.
Yes.
We can blame you for whatever happens.
Oh, no!
And so, you know, the bottom line was is that the show actually went quite well, didn't it, Gary?
Yeah.
It did really well. So the only thing that we really hold you responsible for.
Yes.
Is that Gary fell back a week ahead of time. unexpectedly, you see, because his alarm clocks, you know, are apparently, you know, have those automatic functions, and but we're older than, because we used to, I guess, fall back on last weekend, but they extended daylight savings time an extra week, so Gary's radio, you know, alarm program fell him back last Sunday, so he woke up an hour late. So, you know, I'm sitting here getting ready for the show to start, and the phone rings, and I answer it, and Gary says, oh, I don't know what happened, but I'll be there just in the nick of time. And sure enough, about 30 seconds before airtime, he came running in the door.
Oh, my goodness.
So we decided that's your fault.
Okay. I'll go with that.
So you just better not, you know, be here, because otherwise it's your responsibility for
I understand. I totally understand.
We were left wondering why Finley was up so early.
Yeah, that's what they said. her little natural alarm clock was working just fine. That's Gary's daughter, by the way. So her little time clock was on schedule, but their real ones were not.
Oh.
So did y'all have a happy Halloween? Did you dress up Finley? Well, what did she? She was a bear, I think.
Yeah, a little bear. We didn't do anything.
Oh, okay.
Go anywhere. We just stayed home. It was fun.
Well, me too. I get lots of trick-or-treaters.
And do you still get lots of trick-or-treaters, Mark?
Well, I swear, yeah. Well, you know, I'm one of those blocks that the houses are close together. I swear they truck them in. Although I have to, I was laughing at one point in the evening and teasing the parents. At one point, there were more parents out on the sidewalk than there were kids. Uh-huh. I swear, there was like 20 parents, you know, out there. And so I kind of was joking with them, saying, you know, next year I'm going to have parent treats because there's so many parents out there.
Gee, if that happens, I'll come.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a good Halloween. I have to say, though, that in years past, since, you know, when I moved, I've been in the house that I'm in now over 6 years, you know, since my mom died, and I moved back to take care of my dad. And last Halloween was the first Halloween that dad wasn't there. And he always enjoyed Halloween and passing out candy to the kids so much that I always just 86 the animals and shut them up in other parts of the house so that there wasn't any issue at the door. Well, last Halloween, of course, I was handing out the treats, so Annie Golden helped me because she loves kids and she loves their costumes and all of that. But this year, my Abyssinians, the cats said they wanted to participate. So let me tell you, I have the only kid-greeting Abyssinians in town because I put Annie in the back room to start with. So the first half of the evening and handing out candy, I had G-Man and Jilps, my blue boys, at the front door. And so I had the screen door propped open so the kids wouldn't have to deal with that. And I'd open the door with the plate of candy and then crouch down. I talked to the cats ahead of time and said, if you're gonna help trick-or-treat the kids, then you have to stay in the house. Because cats that go outside on Halloween get in big trouble. And G-Man, of course, is my little social butterfly, but he's also the door darter and would be all over the neighborhood. Darn, if they didn't listen, followed their orders just great. And it was just a hoot. The kids loved it because, you know, G-Man would be right at the door and right there and bumping and rubbing the kids and looking at their costumes and all that kind of stuff. And one little girl said, I hope, because her brother was behind her coming up the stairs, I hope my brother doesn't scare your cat. You know, because she thought his costume was really scary. It was very cute, and my cats had a great time. And then halfway through the evening, we switched. And Annie Golden got to do the other half, and well, it was quite nice. We had fun.
How many trick or treaters did you have?
Oh gosh, I would say, you know, maybe 50.
Wow!
So. Wow!
We don't have trick or treaters on our street anymore.
Well, we get them. We get lots of them. All right, let's see. So today, let's talk about Dave. It's the first Sunday of November already. Oh, geez. And that means it's Vet Sunday. Dr. Al Pluckner, author of Pets at Risk, From Allergies to Cancer, Remedies for an Unsuspected Epidemic, is his latest book, also the Human Compendium of Articles on the same subject. Dr. Al will be joining us after the bottom of the hour, and we, of course, will have open phone lines, and we'll take your animal and human and or human behavior healing questions today. We'll be doing current events the usual time, about 10:50 today, and it is our second week with a new pet of the week from King County Animal Care and Control. Nancy McKinney will join us, tell us about our new pet of the week, and I'll just give you a hint. It's kind of Halloween-y in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, if I said pet of the week and Halloween, what do you all think of?
Black cat.
You got it. So ooh. You'll have to wait until find out about our Halloween cat. And then, let's see, 11 o'clock, we'll do our winter tip, fall and winter tip, and then the Animal World Prize Closet. Sandy's back with the keys.
I am.
And we, of course, didn't give anything away last week, so we have an abundance of wagon tails, liver cookies.
We do.
Yum! Annie Golden would like her name to be on the list. She's eaten all the ones that we have. They're really great treats, so... There's a regular formula, grain-free formula, and you get to choose which one you would like. Also, 10% discount coupons for purchase online from Wagon Tails liver cookies. So if you would like those, we will be giving them away all day on the show. And let's see, we better get rolling here because we don't have a lot of time.
We have a busy show today.
Well, yeah, and I have a medium pile of news stuff. Not a lot shaken out about animals in the news. I guess it's really kind of a light week, which is good because we don't have a lot of time, but I think most of the news is being taken up by election stuff. I voted. Did you vote yet?
Oh, yes.
I voted.
Hey, all right. We've all voted.
I like voting early.
Yeah, well, I've always done...
Did you go to the polls, or did you...
No,
do? Yeah, I'm a male person.
Yeah, I do an absentee mail. However...
Yes.
I caught a clip of Oprah's show. I think it was Thursday in the evening. I was flipping channels, and she was saying that she had voted, and it was a new electronic voting in Chicago. Uh-huh. And the first vote on the electronic was for president, and she pushed her choice and then went through the ballot, and she thought she'd go back and check, and she realized when she went back it had not recorded her presidential vote.
Huh.
So she was like having heart failure there on TV. Say, and she didn't hit it hard enough or something. So anyway, that made me think about my ballot, and usually I just stick it in the mail and don't even think about it. But this time I said, oh, now that they have the drop boxes where you can drop your ballots off. So
oh, yes.
I took mine to the drop box in the university district.
I took mine to a drop box
you
as well.
You did too. Wow, yeah. I just thought, well, it'd be better to stick it in. Then I know it got there for sure.
Right. Absolutely right.
So we're all in good shape. All right. Well, let's get into our animals in the news, starting with follow-up, except I'm going to start with a happening today that happens to be related to animals in the news. There was a long article in yesterday's Seattle Times. You might want to pick this up on the front page of the local news. Pets feeling hard times too. Unseen victims, dogs, cats, and even horses are being neglected and abandoned by some owners caught in the squeeze of a weaker economy. You have to pull this up online if you didn't see it to read all of the details, but major concerns about animals being left behind with foreclosures. And, of course, the hard times with horses that we talked about in pretty great detail last week with our shelter updates when we were talking to Equine Rescue. But the reason I put this first in the news department is because the Seattle Humane Society is put together a pet food drive at today's Seattle Seahawks game. So the press release didn't come out till later in the week, and in the paper yesterday. So just in case any of you are listening, if you're going to the Seahawks game today, take some food, animal food, dog, cat, canned, dry. They'll even take open bags of food. They will be at the southwest corner of Quest Field from 9 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. So you can just drop off your pet food donations there. So that's today. Quest Field, bring food for the animals. And that their annual holiday pet food drive will I think that kicks off around Thanksgiving. Another article related to that. This was the Seattle Times on Thursday. No penny pitching for pampered pets. So it's kind of like the opposite, that the concern of all the pets being neglected and abandoned in the economy. There's another group here. It says retailers may be worrying about the possibility of the worst fourth quarter in generations, but those in pet products industries are finding themselves in an oasis among the gloom of U.S. business. Now, I don't know how you might relate to this, Sandy, but it says companies that sell everything from organic dog treats to couture-inspired pet toys said business is up even as economic indicators show shoppers are pinching pennies during one of the worst downturns in decades. Quote, I think they're buying nice dog collars instead of remodeling their kitchens.
Ah, I like that.
Interesting concept. It may sound counterintuitive, but experts say many pet owners are as dedicated to their animals as parents are to children, and that means they're willing to sacrifice on themselves before trimming back on their animals. So I don't know. According to this article, people are still spending money on their animals. Ah, follow-up article. Sandy, you weren't here for this discussion last week. Interesting to see what you think. But have you heard that the Hoopla King County Council is now considering banning chaining of dogs?
Yes.
King County government will take a closer look at banning dog owners from continuous chaining of their animals. The King County Council directed Ron Sims to report by February 28th on the practicality of an ordinance directing the practice. And this is a quote from one of the council members. Dogs are social pack animals, and forced isolation through continuous chaining is cruel and can make them aggressive or even vicious. Councilwoman Julia Patterson said chained dogs are 2.8 times more likely to bite than unchained dogs. I went on the record last week of saying I'm a little concerned about this legislation, Sandy. I don't know if how you feel about it, but in everything I've read, I mean, I would certainly agree as a behavior therapist that tethering or chaining is probably the least preferred form of confinement. But in many cases, I would rather see a dog tethered or chained than running loose. And I the question I kind of put to Gary, if you had a pit bull next door in the yard with a flimsy fence, wouldn't you feel better if the dog was tethered? The other concern that I have is that I think we can go overboard in terms of trying to control that confining to small areas of space is not necessarily a bad thing for dogs. They are den animals. It can be handled well. And so who decides how long is too long? But the biggest thing that concerns me is that everything I've read about this anti-chaining legislation, there's all these statistics about it makes dogs 2.8 times more likely to bite than unchained dogs. I think the big key is not the fact that they're chained, it's the location of where they are chained. Because if they're chained in the front of the house or in an area where people have access to them, then they can become more aggressive. Because, you know, dogs, if they're confronted with a threat, they fight or flight. Most dogs would choose to get the heck out of Dodge if they can avoid it. But when they're tethered, they feel like their chance of flight has been canceled, so they become more defensively aggressive. And the likelihood of being teased or harassed when they're exposed is much greater. But nowhere in any of this discussion about chaining have I seen anybody talk about the location of chaining the dogs. So that's my concern. What do you think, Sandy?
Well, you know, Boy, it's a 50-50 for me, because I feel, and I've seen a lot of chain dogs, and I think that what the majority of these people are thinking in chaining are dogs that are chained 24/7.
Yeah.
And I don't buy that. I can't stand and say that that's right, because if you're going to have a dog, and don't tell me that dog's for protection, because a dog that's chained is not going to keep somebody away from your house or out of your yard. So if they really want to break into your house, they're going to. Now, if your house was fenced and you had a guard dog that was running loose, that's a whole different story. That dog is protecting.
Right.
And
yeah,
Depending on the breed, some dogs are meant to be outside dogs and not inside dogs. But I don't believe that there's any dog that's meant to be chained.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you when you say, you know, the 24/7. But that's not necessarily mentioned in any discussion.
And that's what I'm saying.
So it's the extreme cases we're talking about, but there are times where, you know, I think tethering or chaining could be very appropriate,
and
location is very important.
I have actually done that. I have gone to the beach. There at one point there was a little house that we rented. It had a beautiful little yard that went right out onto the beach. And there were a couple times that I wanted to fix dinner, but the dogs wanted to be outside. So I had one of those, you know, spiral metal things that you screw down into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I put
mm-hmm.
them both on a big, nice,
yeah,
long tether that they could walk around the yard. I could see them from the window, and I had them outside for probably 45 minutes while I prepared food.
Yeah, and I don't think they're not talking about that kind of chaining. But
right.
I think they're
going
to have to be very careful if they're going to legislate this, that it is worded correctly.
And I agree.
Because there may be situations that are not abusive at all, and it's very appropriate. And that just because a dog, I don't necessarily agree with, just because a dog is chained, that it's going to make it aggressive. It depends on where it's chained and what happens to the dog when it's chained.
Right.
That makes a huge difference.
If the dog is abused and teased and whatnot, yes, that dog is going to become aggressive. But a lot of times, if that dog has a really sweet personality, that dog is going to become extremely submissive.
Yep. Yep. All right. We need to move on here. Just another follow-up. Remember that case of the monkey that was scalded to death at the Everett Animal Testing Laboratory?
Yeah.
Well, Posado Safe Haven tried to make a citizen's complaint against them, but this was denied by a judge. So just to let you know, there will be no prosecution on that case. Posada was not successful. Both papers carried a nice story this week about the rare pond turtles that are being raised at the zoo. You know, we've talked about the first batch was released earlier this year. And there are pictures in both the Times and the PI. You can look up the rare pond turtles hatch at zoo. There are two pictures of these. Look at these, Gary, these little turtles hatching out of their eggs.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah. So if you've never seen a turtle hatching out of an egg, Sandy, I don't know if you can.
Yeah, I've seen them, actually. I've actually been on the beach when the turtles, for turtle watch.
Oh, really? And look how tiny they are.
Yeah, it gives you the perspective.
Yeah, they really are very tiny. Because the finger is as big as the frog. More problems in China. And they're really now with looking at the fact that many, many food products may be tainted with the melamine, especially now because animal feed over in that country has been tainted. They're really wondering about, of course, you know, they've had to recall eggs. I had no idea. Did you know, Sandy, I didn't know the eggs at Walmart were from China?
No.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I buy cage-free eggs, so.
Yeah, but we bring eggs in from China. I mean, who knew?
Doesn't that just make a whole lot of sense? Don't get me started.
Yeah, so anyway, I'd be real cautious about any food that comes from China right now, and that's what this article in the paper is talking about. All right, let's move into the regular news. Oh, this is just creepy. This is out of Riviera Beach, Florida. 70-year-old woman is injured and three dogs are dead after a swarm of bees terrorized a neighborhood in South Florida.
I heard about that.
Yeah. Now, get this. Authorities say crews removed 50 pounds of honeycomb from the side of a home in Palm Beach County after Friday's attack. The hive has been contained. The bees swarmed Nancy Hill and her two dogs. She's treated in the hospital, but unfortunately the dogs died. The bees also attacked two other dogs in the neighborhood. One died, one recovered. Lab tests will determine whether the bees were Africanized bees, also known as killer bees. Their stings are no more potent than an ordinary bee's, but the insects are far more aggressive and attack in swarms. And we, of course, learned from all the shows we did on bees and wasps this summer that Africanized bees, I mean, they have to be more aggressive because in Africa there's much bigger wildlife to destroy their hives. So they're really, you know, they evolve to have to be more powerful, unfortunately. Escaped over here, and that's not a good thing, but ooh. Now, speaking of bees, some people have too much time on their hands. Australian and Swedish researchers say they have discovered that bees have the ability to count, but only up to the number 4. This is the Queensland University. They trained honeybees to count by placing sugar water just past a number of regularly spaced yellow stripes inside a narrow tunnel, and the bees quickly learned to which marker they needed to fly in order to find the food. And then after training these bees, they took the honey away and then observed them to see, and they have no idea why they can't seem to grasp the concept behind the fourth marker. But I mean, do we really need to know that bees can count up to 4? And who do you suppose is paying for that? You know, at least it's in Australia. Oh, well. Okay. Now, here's a polar bear threat now on the Russian side. Melting ice and increased poaching are causing polar bears to die out in remote Siberian region of Chukotka. Let's see, and this is according to Animal International Fund for Animal Welfare. The shrinking Arctic ice sheet is forcing more bears to live on land over the summer. They have more encounters with humans, scavenging for food, and it says that about 100 polar bears are being killed in Russia each year, despite their protected status, to meet the demand for increasing polar bear furs.
Oh, stop.
Yeah, yeah. That's going on in Russia. Oh, well, and here, I was going to put this in good news because they escaped, but the fact that they're circus tigers, I couldn't put it in good news. But did you hear about this? This is out of Germany. Three Siberian tigers leapt through a wall of fire to safety from a burning truck on Monday on orders from their circus ringmaster. The tigers drew on their experiences of leaping through fiery rings during performances to escape a fire on the truck, taking them to a show in northwestern Germany. Circus workers rounded up the tigers from the highway after the trainer ordered them to leap to safety.
And, wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, so it's a good thing that they knew how to jump through fire. Not a good thing that they're in the circus to begin with, but... Oh, and then here's we talked about this before, but the first ivory auction in a decade sold more than 7 tons of tusks to Chinese and Japanese bidders on Tuesday, over $1 million. The proceeds will go to the Game Product Trust Fund, created in 99 to promote conservation in communities where elephants range. They were... given permission last year, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species ruled that these countries could sell off their government stocks. So that's what they did. But can you imagine? That's how many tons of ivory, 7 tons, that have been confiscated. That's incredible. Oh, geez. And now, this is unbelievable. In Saudi Arabia, they're now having... beauty contest for sheep. And there's actually a picture there. This is contestants scampered down the runway, bleeding at admirers. Poets sang their praise in verse as the male-only audience appraised the competitor's physical beauty. But instead of receiving roses and a tiara, it was off to the highest bidder for many finalists in the first Saudi beauty pageant featuring locally bred sheep. The goal of Thursday's competition was to encourage Saudis to breed the sheep for quality. Some of those who attended the event said Saudi sheep, known as Neji sheep, have markedly improved over the past decade because of the attention given to breeding. Some 4,000 men assembled on a lit-up stretch of desert covered with hundreds of carpets to have a beauty show for sheep. Okay. All right, how about we end out this disaster with the best good news about animals. Oh. Now, I don't know if it'll work today, but it might bring out some sunshine. A cute article, or a nice article in the Seattle Times Tuesday, eye-openers, Vermont Mountains... Mountain draws volunteers to count hawks. This is kind of neat. Can you know that the volunteers, and this is out of Brookline, Vermont, sitting on top of Putney Mountain, counting the hawk migration, and they identify kestrels, sharp-shinned, and red-tailed hawks and eagles. The information is included from about 200 sites in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, kept by Hawk Migration Association of North America. And this year's jackpot was on September 16th when they counted 1,900 hawks migrating that day. And at least one volunteers on the mountain every day from September through November to make sure that they get all the hawks counted. So anyway, if you want more details on that, that's kind of neat. Let's see. Oh, this was sent, one of the listeners sent me this. Really good article. This is out of USA Today. this last week. Pets have a place in the sickbed. And this article's talking about, well, it says, all pet owners and most in the medical community now acknowledge the healing power of animals. Some doctors even write prescriptions, giving hospitalized patients access to the pets they left at home. Now, this is something I'd like to see this happening in our hospitals. At the 1,000-bed Christiana Hospital in Newark, Delaware, patients can request orders for a recuperative in-room visit with their pet. Is that cool?
I like that.
Isn't that neat?
Definitely.
So it's USA Today. If you want to search their website, more information on that. It says, obviously, there's a growing number of data that suggests that a pet may be as powerful in a person's recovery as the medical treatment. And then there's a story about a lady with a cancer and her two greyhounds and how hard she had to work to get the doctors to agree to let them back in her life. But they did. Now, the secondary to that, this was a related article on USA Today. How great would this be? Listen to this program. We need this at our local hospitals. Another separate nod to patients' connections to pets is evolving. A handful of hospitals and care facilities now arrange care for the pets of people confined for days or weeks. Quote, it's a huge burden of concern to take off the patient. A patient care coordinator at St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan, which has a volunteer corps that tends to 200 to 300 pets a year. Often the pet belongs to someone who lands unexpectedly in the emergency room or someone who has no one to call on when surgery is required. Quote, every hospital needs something like this, unquote. I sure agree. In Ontario, a similar program was introduced last year at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, which has 26 facilities throughout the province. But how great is that? A volunteer group from the hospital that, so, you know, someone, a single person that doesn't anyone help with their animals but has to go to the hospital, has to be there for a while, and they take care of the animal, go to their house. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah.
That's a great program. We really need more of that. All right, now, the winning, you're going to love this one. The winner of the best good news about animals is a press release from, guess what, King County Animal Care and Control. They're calling it the Double the Love. KCACC is launching a new Double the Love promotion aimed at placing more of its adoptable cats and kittens into homes during the month of November. Hundreds of felines are available for adoption at the Kent and Bellevue Center and through their foster home network are available. And basically what they're doing is a two-for-one. You can get two kittens or two cats for the price of one.
That's
is that
excellent.
Cool?
Isn't
it about
cool.
time that somebody did this?
Yep.
Woohoo! Things really are improving, I think, and thanks to Nancy McKinney. But you can save a bunch of money now because we know two cats, if they're cats that get along, two cats are always better than one.
I agree.
You know, so you could adopt two littermate kittens. And remember, same sex is better than opposite sex when adopting cats. But now I want to talk to Nancy about it. Hopefully they'll design... come up with a room where they can have cats loose so they could see who gets along with each other. I'll have to ask her about that if they have that kind of deal. But Double the Love at King County Animal Care and Control. You can get 2-for-1 on kittens and cats through the month of November. So, woohoo! Good job, KCACC. That concludes the best good news about animals. And... also brings us to the bottom of the hour. We will take care of our advertisers and sponsors. I don't see any sunshine coming through there, Gary, but we could sure use it. All right, we'll take care of our advertisers and sponsors, get Dr. Al on the line, and we will begin Vet Sunday. Animal World continues straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk AM 1150. If you've got dogs and cats and all kinds of animals, you need to know that even if you feed the highest quality all-natural food, even if you home cook for them, the ingredients in the food is exposed to heat, light, and oxygen that begins to destroy a lot of the important stuff. That's why Designing Health created the Missing Link. Now, they start with human-grade, all-whole, natural, raw food sources, protect it from heat, light, and oxygen. It comes to us in a powdered form in a resealable gold foil pouch. Keep it in the refrigerator. Once you've opened it, mix up your animal friend's food, add in the missing link, a little cool water to mix it up, and voila, you've added what's missing, like the balanced omega 3, 6, and 9 oils, the enzymes in the raw ingredients, the fiber. The missing link tends to eliminate excessive shedding problems in dogs, eliminates hairball problems in cats, and there is a missing link formula for dogs, one for cats. There is a missing link formula vegetarian for both dogs and cats, and you can also feed that to other critters like house rabbits and guinea pigs, gerbils, and the like. There is a bird formula and a horse formula, and missing link plus with glucosamine for connective tissue and joint support. So ask for the missing link wherever you shop for premium pet supplies, or you can go directly to Designing Health. Be sure and tell them that Martha Norwalk sent you. You can call them at 1-800-774-7387 or visit them online at www.designinghealth.com.
Living Music Radio, high vibe music and talk.
Treat yourself to Living Music Radio with Janet, Narion, and special guests.
Living Music Radio, high vibe music and talk.
It's all about the magic of music and sound. With all that's going on these days, there's a real need for positive, uplifting music and radio. Living Music Radio.
Living Music Radio. For showtimes, go to livingmusicradio.com.
Hey, today's pampered pets deserve a big apology. Pets are fed the same processed foods meal after meal, which they would never eat in the wild. Research continues to prove that the more we consume processed foods, the more health suffers. Over 25 years of Dr. Wysong's research has proven that pets suffer from the same degenerative diseases plaguing their human friends. Pets don't have a choice about what's put in their bowl, and their human caretakers have been led to believe that they're doing the right thing by feeding this way. Learn more about it at www.wysong.com. .net. Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and want to say thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. Hope you do that every Sunday morning. We're here 9 a.m. to noon right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And believe it or not, it is the first Sunday of November. And the first Sunday of the month, of course, means it's Vet Sunday with Dr. Al Pleckner, the author of Pets at Risk, From Allergies to Cancer, Remedies for an Unsuspected Epidemic. Also, the human compendium of articles on the same subject. It is entitled Endocrine Immune Mechanisms in Animals and Human Health Implications. Now, you can also check out more information about Dr. Al and his work at his website, which is www.drpleckner.com. And I will let you know at this point that phone lines are open. And we will have open phone lines for the rest of the show. If you have an animal or human medical care question for Dr. Al, you may call in at any time, and your calls will take priority. Also, of course, if you want some Wagon Tails liver cookies, you can call in for that as well. And the numbers you can reach us at are local number 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Long distance within Western Washington is 888-298-5569. That's 888-298-5569. And throughout the course of the show, you can send us an email to our live email address. Pretty simple. AnimalWorldLive@Hotmail.com. AnimalWorldLive@Hotmail.com. All right. Without further ado, welcome back to Animal World, Dr. Al Pleckner. Good morning, Dr. Al.
Good morning, Martha. Thank you again for having me back. I do appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. We are delighted to have you. And you are coming from to us from, Southern California, correct?
Right, Santa Monica right now.
And what's the weather like in Santa Monica?
It's actually raining, which is, kind of a pleasant change here. And the weather, it's probably in the low 70s.
Oh, well, you're warmer. Send some of that heat up here.
Well, yeah, I know up in Idaho we have in Orofino. Talked to my son. It's been like 22 to 26. We've had 2 months of summer with ragingly hot temperatures, and now we've got winter again.
Wow.
And he's out working, trimming the trees. He has a gentleman that works with him on Saturdays and Sundays. And so they're out cleaning up the forest. We'll send you some emails. I'll tell you what, it looks better than any national forest you'll ever see.
Oh, I'd love to see photos,
life.
And I bet our listeners would, too. For any of you that haven't been listening to Dr. Al for all the years he's been doing Animal World here, he was retired in Idaho doing kind of rehabbing the earth over there and setting up wildlife refuge type stuff. But when you went back into practice and moved back down to Southern California, your son and his wife have taken over.
So they continued on what we were doing.
Right.
I was a little bit of the supervisor. He was the grunt.
Uh-huh.
But he thinks, they both ran my hospital for 8 years down here.
Oh, really?
Very, very, very bright. And they can, once we get this thing going, they're going to be involved in doing everything.
But right now they're taking care of everything in Idaho.
That's exactly right.
All right. So you are now in private practice again down in Santa Monica.
Yeah, and I'm glad I came back. This practice. Yeah, I don't think retirement's all that's stacked up. I think you can do what you can do when you're retired, but you can still work while you're doing it.
All right. Well, now I said that phone calls would take priority, and so I'm going to honor that. And now, for any of you that are listening, if you haven't heard Dr. Al before, as the show progresses, when we don't have phone calls, we will talk about the endocrine immune imbalance that Dr. Al explains in Pets at Risk and how it works and what it's all about. But right now, Dr. Al, we've got someone calling in, so let's go ahead and take that call. And we are going to Seattle. Joan.
Hi.
Welcome to Animal World.
Thank
You're
you.
Live with Dr. Al Pluckner.
Thank you. I'm calling about the human question and about rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, that's a good one.
And how does he feel about, digestive enzymes, specific digestive enzymes for rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, I think what the enzymes do, and you're talking about digestive, plant-based, what have you,
John?
Yeah, I think what that does is it makes more available, if you will, the nutrients by breaking them down to your system or the systems of which the absorption of the nutrients can go to enhance the integrity, if you will, of those glands that produce these hormones that regulate the immune system. So they definitely are of value straight away.
Well, I would say, Dr. Al, because of this endocrine immune imbalance that you've discovered, and for anyone that doesn't know, it applies to dogs, cats, horses, and humans. And part of the imbalance involves the health of the intestinal tract and the body's ability to process and assimilate nutrients.
Exactly.
So,
and rheumatoid is
that's what I'm going to ask
you. Autoimmune, yeah.
Is rheumatoid arthritis related to this imbalance in any way?
I think it is. I think I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Really?
Because what we're looking at is, again, if we have this hormonal imbalance in a certain type of a cortisone, whether it's deficient, defective, or bound,
mm-hmm.
What occurs is it does free up, it causes excess estrogen to be produced from the adrenals. But what it does is it not only binds thyroid, but it frees up the immune cells to react against normal tissue. And it also causes the only depression it causes is in the antibody production, and that mucous membrane antibody, as it drops, it affects your knees, your synovial membranes, your gut, your respiratory, your urinary tract, urogenital tract, the whole thing. And what you get into, Joan, is unfortunately, if in a human, if that IgA level, which is your mucous membrane antibody, is measured and it's probably 70, 75 or lower, then even using digestive enzymes for rheumatoid, what will happen is the enzyme will not only break down the proteins and things into amino acids and things that could have been absorbed, but if the IgA level is down, well, all it's doing is it's digesting everything that's going out in the stool and nothing that's going into the bloodstream. And that's the thing that's not really, really understood.
All right, well, let me know. If I want to make sure, Joan, and Joan, you jump in any time.
Okay.
But I want some clarification. Are you saying, Dr. Al, that we'll say we have a patient with rheumatoid arthritis, and that patient underlying that rheumatoid arthritis is this endocrine immune imbalance?
Right.
And if they have this imbalance and it's severe enough to have really tanked the IgA, which is the antibody that protects, keeps the mucous membrane healthy. If that's real low and the intestinal, the gut is not healthy, then I think what you said is digestive enzymes are really not going to help the patient any.
No. And then, too, Joan, the other end of the stick with many of the medications that are given for rheumatoid that are oral, they don't work either because they're not absorbed.
Oh, that makes sense.
And this is
because the gut is not healthy.
It has to be done.
So it should be done
routinely to make sure that if your physician or veterinarian says, hey, let's try this and this, this will be a source that we'll give you, they have to make sure it will get to your bloodstream, period. Oh.
And that's one thing you could... No, I'm just thinking here, Dr. Al. If a patient could request that their MD, their doctor, test their IgA level... Because isn't that a test that any lab can run? It's not like
any lab can do that. They you know, as you and I know, total estrogen they can't run, which is all part of this. But
when
that is high and all, you are going to get a depression. And if you have a depression of the IgA, that's going to say to your physician, hey, you know, my patient's below this level, so I know unless I give injections of what is necessary, it will not work. And like you and I've talked about, too, real quickly, is that many times when animals are in the hospital on IVs and intramuscular injections, they do fine. When they're sent home with the same medication, they don't do well.
Because it's oral.
Exactly. They don't absorb it.
Right.
So we've got to look at absorption. This is huge with any disease.
Yeah, but you absolutely, you recommend digestive enzymes for animals and for humans.
You bet. Why not maximize the availability of nutrients to the body?
But I think what you're saying, though, is that if this imbalance is severe enough and the intestinal tract is unhealthy enough, all the digestive enzymes in the world aren't going to help that gut absorb much any better.
It'll never reach the bloodstream and never get to those organs that need those nutrients. And then it's a vicious cycle is what it is. It's a protective cycle for a horrible, you know, condition that's occurring. And you do see this.
So, Joan, does that answer your question?
It does. I think with the digestive enzymes, the sooner you can start them before you start medications would probably be beneficial, maybe.
Well, it will, you know, Joan, too, with holistic and homeopathic stuff.
Yeah.
All the claims and things, the natural things, are all good and fine. However, if the patient can't absorb them, you might as well, you know, like I say, squirt it in your ear because it's not going to work.
Thank you.
Well, because that's just kind of a general thing for people to understand. If the intestinal tract is not healthy, it can't necessarily process and assimilate the nutrients, and that would be in animals or humans.
Exactly.
Unless you heal the intestinal tract, the digestive enzymes are not necessarily going to make a huge difference. They might make some difference, but that's not going to override the problem without healing the intestinal tract.
Right, and this relates to, in general, it relates to allergies. It relates to any of these situations where you're taking medications, even infections, a simple infection. Here, let's take Keflex. Let's take whatever. Well,
that's an antibiotic.
Yeah, and how do you know that's going to work? How do you know that's going to get into the bloodstream? In many instances, they'll say, well, it didn't work. We'll try something different. Why try something different? The patient can't absorb. Why don't you measure that inability to absorb and then change it around, which can be done injectably till we get the IgA up to a point where absorption is fine.
Okay. All right, Joan, any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right, well, thanks for calling Animal
You're welcome.
World.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, so I will absolutely honor telephone calls above and beyond anything else. So if you have an animal or human medical care question for Dr. Allen, keep in mind it does not have to relate to the imbalance in any way, shape, or form. If there's something wrong with your dog or your cat or your horse or you get whatever you want to talk about, Dr. Allen, call us here, and phone numbers, local number, 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Long distance within Western Washington is 888-298-5569. That's 888-298-5569. If you call in long distance from somewhere, we'll definitely let Sandy know you're calling long distance, and we'll get you on immediately, or at least as soon as we possibly can. And, of course, you can send us an email during the show to animalworldlive@hotmail.com. All right, Dr. Al, let's go back then to the beginning here and talk about this endocrine immune imbalance a little bit. It's been, what, over 40 years since you've been practicing, since you started your veterinary practice?
It's been 42 years. First paper written on this was November 6, 1976.
And I guess it all started, well, yeah, apparently you had an interest in endocrine immune systems and functioning before you ever went to vet school.
Mm-hmm.
So that it just continued. But what really triggered this whole thing was graduating and starting practice in Southern California. You had a lot of dogs coming in with flea allergies and skin problems and hot spots. And the standard veterinary treatment for severe, you know, skin allergy would be to give cortisone.
Correct.
As an anti-inflammatory.
Right. It's a wonderful drug that does all this good stuff.
And it worked.
It did really, yeah.
It would calm things way down. But then if you continued giving it for too long, there could be some negative side effects. But you were not willing to simply accept that, okay, we give cortisone as an anti-inflammatory, but not for very long. You just didn't want to accept that and do it. You wanted, well, what questions arose for you at that time?
Well, could we as a profession, being human or veterinary, could we be funding unwittingly an imbalance in cortisol? Why doesn't somebody measure this? But the point of it is, cortisone has such a bad enigma attached to it that no one really realizes that the body produces, if we're all normal, 30 to 35 units of natural cortisone every day.
So yeah, it's a hormone that we have to have in balance.
I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think, you know, the teeter-totter effect between the cortisone and the total estrogen is your life support system. And when that is off, horrible things happen. But the interesting thing is, because the professions don't know how to fund an imbalance in cortisol without causing problems, the most dreaded, probably, medication in the world is cortisone.
Yeah.
The most important one in the whole world is probably cortisol.
Right. So, which is why your work is considered controversial, because it all revolves around cortisol. But when people are saying how bad cortisone is, they're failing to acknowledge at the same time that it is a normal hormone that our body needs to have and produce in order to be healthy and in balance.
Right, and it's got to be in dogs and people. It's got to be utilized with thyroid hormone, not only so much for the binding the estrogen does, but once you normalize it, it's your insurance policy that in 24 hours, that amount of physiological replacement of cortisol will be broken down. And if
okay.
it's not
yeah.
used that way, there's a residue.
All right, let's come back to that in a moment, because basically, you know, 42 years ago, you wanted to know why the cortisone was working.
Sure.
And if there was an imbalance, was giving the cortisone replacing something that was missing? So you started doing all kinds of
cortisols
testing and so forth to figure all of this out. And the bottom line is that eventually you did, and you came up with this basic endocrine immune imbalance that over the years you have been able to relate to, well, I guess, well, what you say, it applies to dogs, cats, horses, and humans, and pretty much, in your opinion, underlies all chronic disease and illness in dogs, cats, horses, and humans. So
it's never been discovered before. See, that's one of the problems. You know, there's Cushing syndrome, where there's too much active cortisone. There's Addison syndrome, which comes out of the adrenals, that regulates your electrolytes, sodium and potassium. So now they're beginning to call this, believe it or not, and I've said call it something different, but they're calling it Flexner's syndrome, because
right.
they it's never been found before. And when the professionals say, where can I read about it, they really can't. They can read my materials, but it's never been done before, and they've got to realize it.
Yeah, we're starting to call it the Pluckner imbalance up here, I guess. Now,
yeah.
You like the way I explain this, so I'll go through this quickly so we can get it out of the way before the end of the hour. But what this is all about, this imbalance underlies, the title of the book, From Allergies to Cancer. It can be allergies, cancer, it could be seizures, it could be inflammatory bowel disease, it could be dental disease, and or much behavior, extreme and irrational fear and or aggression. So not
right.
only physical disease, but behavioral issues as well. And what it's all about is that one either is born with this condition, this imbalance, so you get it on a genetic level, or it can be acquired because of chemical exposure, toxic exposure, stress, that sort of thing. Or it happens kind of as a result of old age. But what's going on is the cortisol that the adrenal glands are producing is either deficient, there's either not enough of it, or it's defective in some way, and the body is not recognizing it and responding to it appropriately. So
exactly.
With the low or defective cortisol, the reaction is the middle layer of the adrenal glands starts putting out estrogen.
And the inner layer
of the adrenal gland starts making estrogen.
Right.
Now, here's the kicker, and this is what's been missed. Now, this is not ovarian estrogen. This is adrenal estrogen. So this can happen with men, women, spayed, neutered, doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with ovaries or testicles. This is adrenal glands, and everybody's got that. So the estrogen is produced, when it gets to a certain level, it then binds or prevents from working other hormones in the body, particularly the thyroid hormone, which, of course, regulates metabolism and all of that. So the thyroid, then hormones are not working, and then the antibodies deplete. And then after that, what happens kind of depends on the individual. And it might be genetic predispositions where the weaknesses
impact
are.
Areas, yeah.
Yeah, so you're either going to get the physical symptoms or the behavioral symptoms or both. Now, you have designed a basic blood panel that diagnoses this imbalance for dogs, cats, horses, or humans. You call it an EI1,
endocrine immune 1, right.
Which is pretty simple. The unfortunate thing is there's only one lab in the country right now that's doing the testing, but at least there's one, and it's not that complicated an issue. It requires, the blood sample being kept cold and handled correctly and shipped overnight to the lab, but they test total estrogen, cortisol, two thyroid hormones, and three antibodies. And that's how one determines whether or not the individual has the imbalance. And then is it fair to say, Al, there's no cure, but there's replacement therapy?
Yeah, sometimes you get a cure because get away from the stress and all those things, the inputs that are causing exhaustion of that middle layer, sometimes that layer will come back with the lifestyle change. In animals, about 99% of them, it's a permanent damage, and that's why so many of the homeopathic natural remedies that I've tried over the years haven't worked, because I found you can't enhance the integrity of something that's not there.
Right. Right. So this is just fascinating in terms of how it affects individuals and then turning them around. But it is true, I think, what you say with humans, you sometimes can cure, and that would be especially in the case of chemical or toxic exposure, in a stress situation that
sure,
put the human into the imbalance. You detox them and get them back into balance, then they could get off the hormone replacement.
But sometimes, people that go in to have their mercury fillings drilled out and they inhale this, get a total suppression of all their endocrine organs, and they can develop this syndrome also. and that's something to look to. But that's not just straight cortisol imbalance. That is a depression of all these things. And we're getting into that. I've got a new book finally coming out doing what
okay, I Okay, well,
like.
Hold on to that, yeah. Because we're right at the top of the hour, so we've got to close out this hour, start the next one. We will, as time permits here, we'll talk about how this condition is treated, because it's a little different if you're a dog, a cat, a horse, or a human, and what Dr. Al was saying about how you can we avoid the buildup of cortisol and the negative side effects.